Thank you, Judge. May it please the court. Fred Ernst on behalf of the appellant, David Liberty. Mr. Liberty was convicted of one count of the Class B felony of promoting child pornography in the first degree with respect to a text message that was posted on a chat site. In addition, eight counts of the Class C felony of possession of child pornography with respect to eight images that were recovered from a computer seized from him. There are three issues that were raised on the appeal. The first is whether or not the written text in the post supporting the count one actually depicted sexual conduct. The second is whether the imposition of eight separate convictions and sentences for each allegedly obscene image found on his computer constituted a violation of the double jeopardy provisions, which in turn turns on a statutory construction. And then third, whether a number of the images looked at separately actually depict sexual conduct and fall underneath the statute. If I could turn to the second issue first, all eight of the possession charges rose out of eight images that were found on his computer seized by the police on May 2nd of 2008. The information alleged and charged that he was in possession of all eight images on or about May 2nd of 2008. He was ultimately convicted of those eight charges. There was another charge where he was acquitted on and sentenced a consecutive term to 3 years on each of those counts.
Is it your position, and just so I understand you right, is that regardless of the number of pictures, if it's on one computer, it's one charge?
Yeah, I think at a minimum, if it's on one, if all the images are, and again, you know, there may be other issues if they're stored on different devices or in different forms, but if all the images are in one place at one time, which as alleged here, that looking at the statute at least does not unambiguously state that there is a separate unit of prosecution is authorized. And turning to that is, you know, again, the issue is looking at the statute, whether or not the legislature has unambiguously expressed its intent to create a separate unit of prosecution for each image in this instance. And if we look at the statute, there are a number of things that indicate that the legislature has not done that. One of the critical things is the use of any. The statute refers to possession of any obscene material. And as noted, and I noticed in the reply brief, or I believe their initial brief, that the term any has been looked at as being somewhat ambiguous in that it can be interpreted as one of a series of items, or some, or all indiscriminately of the number. If you look at the Colorado decision in People v. Renadier, one of the cases decided by both sides in this case, the court really addresses the problems inherent in the term any obscene, any, in general. And that was also the issue that was addressed by a court way back some time in Baker with respect to weapons charges, where it was the possession of any weapon. The court found that to be ambiguous as to what unit of prosecution, therefore someone in possession of two firearms would be subject to only a single unit of prosecution.
Could the images found be differentiated such that they could be more than one unit of prosecution?
Well, and I guess the question is whether or not the legislature intended for separate units of prosecution to be permitted based on the fact that maybe there's different conduct depicted in each image. And there's really no, looking at the text of the statute, there's really no indication that that was the case. And I understand that was the argument submitted by the appellant, kind of referring to drug laws. You know, there's a critical distinction between drug laws as the cases have developed and possession in this case, in the sense that with respect to a drug, an offense of drug possession, the jury is not or the finder of fact is not required to broadly whether or not the person is in possession of a controlled substance. Rather, the state is required to identify specifically the controlled identify and prove that the defendant is in possession of a specific substance. In this case, with respect to the child pornography or obscenity laws, the state is required to prove, and the jury is instructed generally that the person is in possession of obscene materials, and then those are further defined. So the jury or the finder of fact is making that broad-based determination as to whether or not they fit within.
How would you interpret the statute then if it went into a facility that had six different rooms that depicted maybe six different individuals involved in something that would be considered child pornography? Six different rooms, maybe 10 pictures in each room. So if there's 60 there, is that still just one charge under your interpretation?
Now, you say if you're, it's in a facility.
Let's just say it's a house that has six different rooms with maybe six different children depicted in six different rooms, 10 pictures in each room.
Okay. Again, you know, it would seem to be if you're talking about whether or not the individual, you know, say it's an individual's house. I mean, it depends on the circumstances. You're alleging that this one individual was in possession of numerous images, although they're located at different places within, I guess, that individual's house.
Well, I'm concerned. I guess for double jeopardy, you could say in room A a charge, in room B a charge, in room C a charge. Maybe if you didn't go by number of pictures. But do you read this statute to say material means all the material in the house, all the material in each room? Because a charging document could differentiate where an individual had this various material.
It was material possessed by the individual as of the date charged.
So you think that the statute under that circumstance would only justify one charge? That's what you think the legislature intended?
I think arguably yes. I mean, it's a different situation because we have here, that's not
one
the situation
computer,
right, where they're stored in different locations. You know, you may get a point where it's like someone has two houses, and the exact ramifications
I'm saying is, what's the difference between a different room in a house and a different file or a different folder in a computer?
Well, because in that case, they're all in a single location at a single point in time by a single individual.
What if there are different points in time? What if it's something's downloaded a year ago, another group of pictures 6 months ago, another group of pictures the day before?
You know, and then that's kind of where the Court of Appeals was going with this. That the question of whether or not, I mean, you got a distinction between obtaining child pornography and possession. I mean, obtaining it is different than possession. And with respect to possession can be joint, and it can be constructive. So the state is not, under the statute, required to show that when or if the defendant was actually obtained the materials. And so, for instance, in the Rogenbach case, which the respondent has provided you a copy, which is another similar case, in that case, that was tried under a constructive possession, joint possession theory, and saying that even if we don't show that the defendant was the person who initially downloaded these objects, that he was necessarily, he can still be guilty because he was in possession of them, he had knowledge of them, and had access to them as of at least abroad at certain times.
But if you prove that he got possession of them at different times, you would have different crimes then?
If the state were to plead it and were to undertake that burden of showing that on specific dates, specific and distinct dates, the defendant was in possession of different items, potentially, yeah, I believe that would be a different case. But, you know, the state would have to plead and undertake that burden, and there would have to be some type of finding with respect to that. We can't just allege that someone is in possession of multiple images within the same time period and then say, well, and there's also evidence that he might have downloaded them at different times. If that is the case, and you know, the jury instructions don't require them to prove that he downloaded them at different times or obtained them. You know, if that is the case, we're starting to allow multiple prosecutions based on the possibility that he could be found to have been in possession of them on different and distinct dates. Then we're you know, we're running into problems if that is not actually alleged and submitted to the jury and there's a factual finding that he is in fact in possession of the items on different dates.
Thank you.
In addition to the language of any, you know, I think we also important to look at the nature of the offense, which we discussed, which was that it's possession, which can be joint and constructive. It's not necessary that we prove that he, or that the state proved that he, the defendant, obtained them. In addition, I think in looking at the intent of the statute is determined by the language. You look at the word material, which is a collective noun, the fact that material includes in its definition singular, plural, and collective nouns as well. And then also there's a 2008 amendment to the statute, which doesn't change the language. It added some language, but doesn't change the language of possession of any obscene material. It also adds child pornography. But then adds this language that possession of 20 or more than 20 images of child pornography elevates it from a, under the amendment, from a Class C felony to a Class B felony, I believe. But it elevates it if the person is in a possession of 20 or more images of child pornography. And quite frankly, that is pretty clear indication that the legislature, at least in 2008, interpreting its own legislation, did not understand the law and the language, any obscene material, to authorize multiple prosecutions, given the fact that this amendment then would just really not make a lot of sense and would be, it just would, I don't even know how you would instruct it based on kind of some of the theories that the state has put forward in terms of, you know, the state said, well, if you have 20 images, you can be charged 20 times as a higher level offense. I don't know how you would instruct that. Or it just doesn't make any sense.
You have time for rebuttal. Is there any other questions?
Thank you.
No, thank you, Judge.
May it please the court. Two principles, I think, that control how the statute is looked at. The first would be that the word any is not to be viewed in isolation or mechanically applied, but rather has to be considered in light of the overall statutory scheme and language. And the second is the rule that this court has followed, I think, since its inception, is that statutes are to be construed in a way that respect to the intent of the legislature and the purpose of the statute. Now, the purpose of the statute, as the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized, is the state's compelling interest to protect the physical and psychological welfare of children from the harm that is caused by the production and possession of child pornography. And certainly the courts have recognized is that each item of child pornography that exists creates an additional amount of harm. So it would not serve the purpose of protecting the interests of children to say that a person who possesses multiple images of child pornography or multiple items of obscene material is subject to the same penalty as a person who only possesses one such item. And as for the use of the word any,
what if you made multiple copies of the same picture? Is that different crimes?
Well, certainly if the creation is certainly a crime. Now, the question, I think, and it's an interesting question as to whether possession of multiple images of the same thing really constitutes another crime. And I can see some parallel perhaps to the drug cases where they talk about, you know, possessing multiple, say, baggies of marijuana. But I think the concern that underlies the drug cases to a certain extent, and maybe distinguishes it from this, is that I think there's some worry with the drug cases that the units of prosecution could be subject to the vagaries of how a drug happens to be packaged. And the example I'd give is that you could buy a large quantity of marijuana in a single, you know, package as a single item and then break it up into smaller items. You know, by that simple act of breaking up into smaller items, are you therefore creating additional counts of possession, and I think that's a problematic issue. of course, the difference with the pornography is even when you're making multiple copies of a picture, it's still, every picture is a unique item. And maybe that calls for a different result in that case. But of course, in this particular instance, we're not dealing with that, so that perhaps is a question to be better addressed when that factual scenario comes up, because
so
we are
all
in fact
these pictures
with
were distinct. Different. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yes, each picture was different from the other. Different poses. In most of the cases, different children. I'll admit there are two pictures, and I'm sorry, I don't recall which ones particularly, where it looks like maybe the same children might have been involved, but certainly not in the same poses. So you've obviously got pictures that are unique from each other. And that was one of the things that the Roggenbuck opinion noted, was the fact that every picture was unique and unrelated to the other, and therefore very easy to come up with different counts on that.
Under our rules, is this not an ambiguous statute that the intent of the legislature is not clear and we're compelled under the rule of lenity to rule against your position?
Well, the first thing I'll say about the rule of lenity is that it's always a last resort, only if there are no other means of ascertaining legislative intent. And I believe those means do exist in this case. And that's why I also don't think that any is in and of itself an ambiguous phrase. And it has to be tied back to the definition of material, because the phrase that's really being keyed on in the possession statute is possession of any obscene material. Now, material also uses the word any, but it pairs it with singular forms of the items that constitute material, that being photograph, which we're talking about in this case, movie, DVD.
The opposing counsel is correct that our statute clearly says the singular means the plural, and plural the singular. That's one of the initial statutes that applies to interpreting
right.
all statutes.
That's right.
So we can't really read into use of singular. What if this case had been submitted to the jury? Would each photograph have had to be submitted separately to the jury with some separate descriptor of the photograph of the red-haired child or whatever?
Yeah, and in fact, that's what the instruction calls for, is to put in a description of whatever the item is. And of course, the jury is then given the definitions of obscene, the definitions of sexual conduct, and it has to apply those definitions to that particular item to determine if they meet those particular definitions. So I really don't see the difference, frankly, between that process and the drug instructions. The only difference, perhaps, is that whether or not something's a controlled substance isn't submitted, but they still have to find that the defendant possessed that particular item.
How do you address your opponent's reference to the statutory amendment in 2008 that enhances the crime based on the number of photographs?
Well, that's a very limited enhancement, what I would point out, because our statute criminalizes the possession of two different items and does so in a way that's consistent with how the U.S. Supreme Court has viewed pornography cases. What the court has said is that there are two types of items that are prescribable. One is child pornography featuring actual children, whether the material is obscene or not. The other is obscene material that features what appears to be a child. The enhancement provision applies only to those items that actually feature actual children. It does not apply to items that would be obscene materials featuring what appears to be a child. And also, I think if you look at what items the enhanced penalty applies to within that, you've got more than 20 pictures, but one motion picture. I think it's one videotape.
But it does say more than 20 pictures is a different crime, and it doesn't say anything about then you can...
It's
you
an
have
enhanced
20 different
penalty
crimes. The enhancement thing, it says if you have more than 20, it's a B felony, not a C felony. It suggests
right.
that it's a felony to have 20, which certainly...
I would suggest no.
At a minimum, would create ambiguity now.
I think if you look at the items there, the fact that it's more than 20 pictures but only one motion picture, I think it's a qualitative difference. It recognizes the fact that moving images have much more impact than still pictures. Certainly, a motion picture can have depictions of sexual conduct that last for lengthy amounts of time.
But that's not addressing the issue. I mean, I understand why they might want to have a more severe penalty for 20 still pictures, but how does it... You're not really addressing the issue they raised, which it suggests that it's a single crime to possess 20 pictures. And you're maybe they meant 20 crimes and they're all C felonies, but that's not what it says.
No, again, I think I'm I apologize if I'm not making my point, but I think the fact that, that a person that possesses that many pictures, and I think each picture is a crime, but the seriousness of that is what causes a sentence enhancement, not a change in the unit of prosecution.
Why does it say AB felony then, instead of 20B felonies?
I think it goes back to prosecutorial discretion, for one thing, as to whether they choose to charge everyone. Just because a person has, say, 1,000 pictures, the prosecutor, for whatever reason, may decide it's not a practical matter, want to bring a charge.
Let me ask everyone. You about that issue, because yeah. that does give me some concern. If each picture could be charged separately or could be charged as one crime, how do we know then what the jury did? And doesn't that present the problem of with jury unanimity? For example, maybe five jurors think he possessed this picture and seven jurors think he possessed that picture.
Right.
So now we've got 12 jurors for one count, but maybe we would have had a no unanimous verdict as to any particular picture.
I think it certainly does raise those concerns. And I wonder, too, about the fact that if we adopt the argument made by appellant, really, even if you possess 25 pictures, you can only be, I guess, tried and convicted for one of those pictures. But you've still got to get a jury determination. It seems to me that the other 24 pictures constitute obscene material under the statute, and how is that determination made? Because I'm sure there would be a claim of uncharged misconduct if you try to put that into evidence. So I think viewing that as a limit on the unit of prosecution does raise some questions as to how
it's really a question of, is the statute ambiguous, not because it is so confusingly written?
Well, I'm generally find myself in agreement the statutes could be
sure.
written better than they are, but I don't believe it is so ambiguous that we have to say that you know, only one unit of prosecution is intended, especially when the legislative purpose behind these statutes is as clear as it is, and certainly the reading that the appellant would like to give to the statute does not further that purpose.
The Southern District in the Horsey case found that any controlled substance was not an ambiguous phrase.
Right.
Did they look at legislative intent in their analysis, or how did they come to that conclusion?
I think they relied primarily on the Williams case that came out of the Eastern District prior to the Baker case that Mr. Ernst relies on in his brief, where they found that you know, the possession of the two different controlled substances was not a double jeopardy violation, and that any was not necessarily a ambiguous term. And in Baker, they relied on, you know, the court again looked at other cases which found any to be ambiguous, but even some of those cases were questioned subsequently, particularly, I think it's, if I remember the name correct, the Wills case, I think, out of Florida, which was later criticized for just mechanistically saying that any is necessarily ambiguous.
How does a controlled substance, how do you analyze that as being similar to a piece of pornography as far as being a separate unit of prosecution?
Well, I think if there is any parallel between those cases and this, is that the cases that found no double jeopardy issue generally dealt with distinct drugs where they could be readily, you know, separated from each other. And in this case, again, we're dealing with distinct and separate images, which can all be readily distinguished from each other. One thing I did want to turn to briefly, I know the questions came up about whether or not it's necessary to show that the time of the possession is taken of something. And I would just note the practical difficulty with that, because while we tend to think of these items being downloaded on a computer where there might be a way to tell that, if somebody possesses a DVD or just a glossy photograph, it might be an impossible thing to prove when possession was actually taken. So Again, that timing is not a requirement of the statute, and I think trying to read that into it causes a number of practical difficulties.
And you didn't plead timing. Timing's not a part of this case.
No, it's not. And what happened in this case is that when the defendant found out, frankly, that some people were on to him, he tried to run a program that was designed to wipe out his computer. He didn't do it quite effectively enough to get rid of anything, but I think that made it difficult for the forensic people to ascertain exactly when the pictures were downloaded. Although they were able to identify two or three different dates on which the files, I think, were accessed in some manner. So there's at least an indication that some of the pictures were present on some different dates, although that distinction can't be made as to all of them. So unless there are other questions, we'd ask the court to affirm the conviction and sentence. Thank you.
If I could address the issue about this kind of notion of broad policy purposes, first of all, I think that trying to construe the language of a statute based on some unarticulated broad policy consideration is fraught with peril in general, and particularly with respect to this case. With respect in the way the statutes are in Missouri, a lot of those statutes and a lot of those cases that the respondent had cited deal with situations where legislatures had specifically segregated laws prohibiting child pornography, meaning actual children were used in their production, from general obscenity laws. Missouri has not done that. They've gone one step further with the 2008 amendment and identifying both, but they're both covered under the same statute. So the statute applies, including a fictional text, not necessarily even an image. And there's also no articulation either within the statute or kind of as some other legislatures do as a part of passing the statute as to what it was they were trying to do. Now, I don't disagree necessarily that in a broad and indirect way that these laws are intended to prohibit the distribution of this type of material, which in turn indirectly would address the exploitation of children in its creation and distribution. But the law is not, it's not like an assault statute that's specifically targeted and defined as a crime against a specific victim. If I shoot someone and I fire one shot, I strike two individuals, two separate crimes, because the law is defined as a crime against a specific victim, as opposed to a possession case such as this, that is not. In addition, even if we look at the purpose of being to prevent the exploitation of children as a potential harm, that doesn't necessarily mean that the legislature intended for multiple prosecutions to be authorized. Because that, in turn, will affect the length of a sentence. And in determining the potential length of sentence, a legislature has to balance a lot of competing interests in addition to the harm, proportionality concerns, how we treat this crime versus other types of crimes and things of that nature. And so I think it's you know, there's other things that will go into setting the unit of prosecution and setting the ultimate length of sentence that the legislature would authorize, and that's the legislature's discretion to do that, and it's the responsibility to do it. And if they don't, and if it's ambiguous, the court under the rule of lenity must favor the least.
It seems to me that you and your opposing counsel disagree as to what the rule of lenity requires. He says that if there are other methods to determine legislative intent, we don't apply the rule of lenity. And I understand that you think if it's ambiguous, we must apply the rule of lenity. Who's right on that?
The rule of lenity is a rule of construction of last resort. And they're correct in that. If you can tell from the context or other ways something, you don't necessarily look at the specific, and I don't disagree that you're just looking solely at any material is the end of the matter. It's a last resort, but the state has put forward no way of resolving the ambiguity other than the notion that this is a serious crime and needs to be he needs to be imposed, multiple punishments need to be imposed. And that's ultimately a determination for the legislature, and they need to express that clearly if that's what's intended.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.